Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Annette Hess initially studied painting and interior design, and later scenic writing. She worked as a freelance journalist and assistant director before launching a successful career as a screenwriter. Her critically acclaimed and popular television series, Weißensee, Kudamm 56 and Kudamm 59, are credited with revitalizing German TV. She has received numerous awards, from the Grimme Prize to the Frankfurt Prize to the German Television Prize, for her work. Her first novel, Das Deutsche Haus, was turned into the successful TV series The Interpreter of Silence, which was nominated for a Critics' Choice Award as Best Foreign Language Series in 2024. We talked to Annette via video call for this interview. Annette Hess, welcome to Deep Dive Genre.
Hello, Christine.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Your series, Deutsches Haus, The Interpreter of Silence, and Weißensee, which both deal with consequences of political upheaval and horrific incidents on ordinary people's lives, have been nominated and received many awards. And you're one of the most prolific German series creators. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a writer?
Thank you, at first, for the compliment. Yes, it was a long journey, and it was really that this quote, she became famous overnight because she worked 20 years every day very hard.
Yeah.
I started, my first passion was writing. When I started reading as a child, I wanted to be a writer. Then my second passion became television, not cinema, because I'm from a small village. We had no cinema, or it was too far. But I was really fascinated by this little box and the stories coming out of it. And so my first idea was to become a director. Mm-hmm. I read an autobiography of Roman Polanski when I was 14. Okay, now he's, of course, a problematic person. And I was really fascinated by this world of filmmaking and of course, also by his life and career and also his movies. I still love them. Okay, it's always a party discussion. What shall we do, cancel or not? I think it's okay that it stays in this level of ambivalence. And then I tried to go to some film school and applied after I made my Abitur. They didn't want me. And then I started first painting because nearly my whole family, they're all artists, painters. Mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't good enough. And then I started with architecture, no, interior design. And I have many interests. I wanted to go to Berlin and I applied to the Szenisches Schreiben, also HDK in Berlin. And they have this course, writing for the scene.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was born by Heiner Müller, the writer, who create some avant-garde for the theater, writer's avant-garde. But I noticed very soon that I'm not a writer for the scene, but I need pictures and montage and so. And then I started to work at the broadcasting station in Berlin. And then I slipped in from the side into the, I wrote sketches, for example, for some youth magazines and so. And then I ended my studies with some screenplay.
Yeah.
Wasn't easy to get that suit.
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah, I wrote it together with my colleague Alexander Pfeuffer, and it is Was nützt die Liebe in Gedanken, Love in Thoughts. It was our first work, and my first experience with my first screenplay was the most horrifying, and they took it away from us, simply.
Yeah.
And it was difficult because it's a true story, so we couldn't do anything.
So it was public property as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was traumatizing.
Yeah.
Then it was a backlash for me. And then I started really what I said, step by step. I started writing for Benjamin Blümchen. This is children's animation. And then I did the weekly, this is In aller Freundschaft, weekly medical series. And I had my first, were allowed to write my first feature film. And then the woman of Checkpoint Charlie was also my first writing about the GDR.
Yeah.
And so I went step by step. And met the people I wanted to work with, and then the format were so successful in 2007. This Woman of Checkpoint Charlie was very, very successful. And then I got some chance for me to sit down and thought about what do I want to see in the television. And I thought I want to see a series about the GDR, because as I'm from the western part of Germany, and I was always fascinated from this eastern part. And I was 22 when the wall came down, so I really was in the middle of everything. And I wanted to see a series about the GDR, but not in the last days, or it's always all the movies you know are about the last days. But in the middle of it, when it's still okay, and that was in 1980, and on the second was I want to really want to see a nice love story. And that was my motivation for this Weißensee.
Okay.
I saw this Life of the Others, for example. And what I did not like about it is this Stasi officer, he was such a nerd. And or he was really a lonesome guy. And I think it's much more interesting if these people are normal family fathers and coming home from their really bad job they did the day over. And that was kind of how I came to this Weißensee idea. And it wasn't that easy to get through with it. Jana Brand, she was an editor at the broadcasting station, and she really helped to get through with it. In the ARD, there are many broadcasting stations, I think 11.
Yeah.
And they're talking everybody together about the new projects, and it's really hard to get through still, and even harder perhaps these days.
Yeah.
But fortunately, it was a big success. It, everybody's still talking about Weißensee. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not nice for me because it's like, oh, you wrote Weißensee, but that's so great. And for me, it's, but I also, and after that, I did that. So.
Talking about all these different projects, and I was wondering how you choose your stories or commit to a project.
It's, of course, always a bit different for the story, how I find some story. But for example, the Kudamm series, about these young women in the 50s in Berlin. And the inspiration came from my mother telling stories about her girlfriends and her youth and how it was when the rock and roll came up and how difficult it was to live a free life as a young woman, and the sexuality where they did not know anything, and so, and that fascinated me.
Yeah.
And she told me especially about one friend of her that was a Monica. And this Monica was a rebel. And I was fascinated, and tell me about Monica again. The tragedy is that she had an accident when she was 17 then. Guy with a bike. And he wanted to impress her, kind of, and drove very fast. And she fell down on her head, and she was three months in a coma, and was kind of like a lobotomy.
Yeah.
She was totally different after that. And she died with 49, so of cancer. Took a while to find the place I started, that I want to tell a story about three roommates in a hotel. And the title was Interconti. I still love it very much. And then I wrote the concept, and then this Hotel Athlon came out in the ZDF, and was so successful that they thought about doing a historical series about hotel. And then my idea was obsolete. And then I had to pick up my daughter from the dancing school, and I sat in the car outside, and they had time to think about it. And then I think that's even much better, a dancing school, of course. So you can have everything.
I remember some stories my mother told me as well, and it feels so far away, all of these things that weren't possible. But then, you know, if you look at the timeline, it's not actually that long ago.
No. And nowadays we have this horrible backlash.
Yes.
And this chat wife.
Oh, God.
Then.
Yeah. It's very depressing and worrying, actually. The political drama in the series. We already talked about that, you know, some of it is based on real events, especially Deutsches Haus. Something as impactful and horrible as the Holocaust. And finding the right tone can be sometimes hard. And I was wondering how you went about that, because you first wrote the book and then wrote the series.
Honestly, it was first a concept for a series, and the idea didn't want it. Yeah.
Okay.
luckily, I'm happy about it now, of course. And then I always wanted to write a book, as I told you, when I was a child. And then I thought, okay, then I can make a novel out of it. And it was really a good idea, because nobody talked to me. So I was free to tell the story as I wanted to tell it. Yes, of course, it's my tone. I always try to work also with humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's too heavy if you tell this Holocaust Auschwitz story without any humor or a side story.
Yeah.
And for me, it was really a good setting to have this in the 60s, and not because I never would be able to tell a story, an authentic and really believable story about the 40s or some camp story or so, because I haven't been there. It's only second-hand writing then, or even third-hand, and you feel it, I think, in most of this historical fiction, you feel that it's not felt. But in the 60s, I'm born 67, but I have feeling for this period, because I'm thinking about my grandparents and this couple, for example, from Deutsches Haus, the Bruns. They are kind of my grandparents, the characters, and this Eva Bruns is like my mother. She was very naive. She heard for the first time from the Holocaust and its truth by the series Holocaust.
Wow. Yeah.
1978.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I tell in Deutsches Haus, they didn't talk about it. And this generation was doomed to silence and not to ask any questions. And I really understand it. It wasn't bearable, I think, for this trauma. You had to put it down for a while. It's easier to realize that your grandfather was an offender, kind of, as if you that your father did some crimes.
Yeah. You mentioned in an interview that you wrote the book very cinematically. Well, you just mentioned that you really had a series concept first. You also mentioned, of course, that you tried to put side stories in there, so the focus wasn't on the horror of the Holocaust. But still, I mean, you had some very heavy scenes in the courtroom. How did you manage, or do you have a special trick, I guess is what I'm asking, how to pace those scenes so the viewers or the readers are not overwhelmed?
The really simple trick, and that happened while writing, Eva Bruns is hearing and experiencing for the first time the truth about the Holocaust. As a child, is if a child is coming to read the word Holocaust, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about it?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is an approach that works. And then, of course, I had all this research done and all this material and all this original voices, and that was very important for me, not to invent any story about the camp. That would be obscene, kind of. So everything is what is said and is original from the tapes, because it's on tape. Most of the trial is on tape.
Yeah.
I listen to that very often, and there's this Die Ermittlung from Peter Weiss. It's also some kind of a collage out of this voices of the trial. And that was kind of idol for me, or kind of, so I heard it and I thought I would love to do it in that way.
Okay. Do you have a favorite scene from Deutsches Haus? And can you give our listeners a bit of a behind the scenes background, or maybe why this is your favorite scene?
And you mean in the series or
in the series,
novel? It's different. When the judge is reading this accusation, the real speech was, I think, 500 pages long. He's reading up all the crimes what these 21 men had done. And it took 2 days, I think, this reading. And I tried to make this kind of a collage out of it. And I worked very long on this text. And it's also not in a logical way. The sentences is really more a collage, montage out of this accusation speech. And I think when we shoot the whole series in Krakow and in Katowice in Poland.
Yeah.
And of course, we did many different takes from this judge, from all sides of this. And then the director, Isa Prahl, and I, we sat together on this by this monitor, and we saw him in the profile reading the whole accusation. And we said, I have goosebumps now all over. And we said that we shall tell it only in this one take and not cut it anyway. And that's my favorite scene. And many people told me, and also the actor, Matthias Lukai, who did it so great.
Going back to Weißensee, you already talked a little bit about it. And I read somewhere, I don't know if that's correct, that your initial pitch was also Dallas in the GDR. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You always need such pitches because the people you have to do with are not have not so much fantasy as we as creatives have. So you have to find this.
Yeah.
It's really a true detective meets Zoolander. And that was my idea, but it's not only a funny pitch, but true, because I thought, as this very powerful family in the capitalism, I wanted to tell a very powerful family in the socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really watched it, Dallas again for the research. And I was surprised, because I hated it when it came out. I don't know, I was 12, 13.
Yes.
And I hate it because I found it so cheesy. And I was on this artist's way, Ingmar Bergman movies. And so it was, I didn't like it. And all this.
Plus, it was dubbed probably as well.
Yeah, yeah. And all these strange American faces and this haircuts and all that. I found it horrible. And now I watched it again. And not now, but 10 years ago. And it's surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Good storytelling, and it's not so flat as I remember. No, it's really a deep conflict in the family, and it's fun, and I really understand why it had this big success.
Yeah.
And of course, there are, then if you look closely, there are the bad guy as JR is. It's Falk Kupfer. And the JR, of course, Sue Ellen, is an alcoholic because she's married to a villain. And then that's also in the Kupfer family, this Anna Loos character is an alcoholic.
Yeah. You know, talking about what you mentioned earlier, that it can be very tough having discussions with broadcasters. And what were your greatest challenges story-wise? Did they ever want you to change something due to, I don't know, let's say political sensibilities, and how did you deal with that?
No, it was really a kind of run through. The first season was run through. For myself, it's nowadays it's nearly impossible to talk about if communism or socialism isn't perhaps a good idea. Justice isn't, we are so far away from it now. And I really tried to write a few scenes about it, that they're discussing this idea, because the idea isn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
The system, how they try to convince the people or to suppress, how they suppress them, is of course wrong. But I really tried to, or I wrote a few seeds, and they were cut out.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was too political, but it's in a way it is, yeah.
Okay.
To answer, because it's so long ago, I really have to think about it. Of course, there were a few, was one of the broadcasting people, he was really like, Frau Hess, you won't tell us that this family is, and so, because he was from Eastern Germany, and we sat in Leipzig together, and I came from Hanover, and so, he did not like the idea that I am writing this series, and that was really a fight.
Yeah. We're pivoting a little bit. Obviously, we've established that you're a wonderful writer for book and for screen, but you're also a librettistin. And for our English listeners who are maybe not familiar with the term, that is similar to someone who writes texts for song, well, a song texter in a way. And also mentioning your wonderful Instagram videos where you're dancing. I was wondering how important music is for your writing process, but also for the tone of your films and series. Like, are you already thinking about maybe what the music might be like for certain scenes? How does that work together?
Musicalism is essential, I think, for writing, because to write is music. It's rhythm and a melody and everything. And tempo, and for example, we have in Germany this Loriot, this very famous comedian, is the right word. It's really
sort of in the vein of, again, also maybe slightly problematic, but Monty Python.
Yeah. If you're talking about Loriot, everybody at the table is coming up with some quotes and quotes and quotes. Everybody knows, so, and I'm convinced that you have these quotes in mind because it's music, because there's always a rhythm in this his dialogues. I have so many friends we can talk these dialogues through, and so, because it's like singing a folk song.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really a dialogue fetishist. I take away here something, I have to put there. And so it's really, it's like music for me, the dialogue. Where is silence? Where are they talking? How fast are they talking at the same time? And that's why when we are shooting, or when I'm watching the rushes, and I see, oh, they changed the dialogue or took some sentence away, I'm really like, no, it's now it's wrong. And sometimes it's really ridiculous because it's somebody's coming in, not saying hello, but good morning. And I'm like, what? That doesn't work. Hello is totally different to Guten Morgen. It's a different atmosphere immediately.
Absolutely. We already mentioned that you're having very different sort of themes and a lot of projects from different paths of life. Is there a creative through line for yourself that you say, this is what my writing is about, what my storytelling is about?
The through line is, I would say, it's of course that I'm always telling in some historical background, because I'm then I'm more able to feel free to tell a story. I have some distance on the stories of characters, the situations, to feel free to do with them what I want. So, but what I'm recognizing is always one point while I'm writing the story. I cannot tell you why I start writing. But there's always this point mostly in the middle, or so, when I'm recognizing that it has something to the plot, the main plot, it has to do with some very deep, essential conflict I have at this moment I'm working on.
Okay.
For example, is the Kudamm series, the first season. It's this little girl fighting against her mother and trying to live a free life. It's a separation and saying goodbye to her mother. And when I saw the rushes, and I saw the last scene where this Monica saying, okay, mama, I'm going, I'm leaving. And I was like, Oh, no, I was crying. I was also, while I wrote it, I was crying. But and then I recognized, of course, my 18-year-old daughter was moving out.
Yeah.
Was in this year I worked on it. And that's really hard when your first child is leaving home.
Yeah.
And the other thing, of course, George's house, it's a story of my grandfather who was a policeman in Poland, and he was, of course, he knew about the crime. He never mentioned these years and only told us his policeman stories of the 50s back in Germany. And as a child, I always thought, oh, the police, these are the good ones.
Yeah.
Nearly until I started writing this novel, I really always felt guilt as a German.
Yeah.
And I think especially because of my grandfather who committed crimes, I think. And I always wanted to get some Wiedergutmachung. It isn't possible, of course. It is my mission to tell about it. And that was also very personal. When I had the first reading with a novel, I came from this, and I asked Rabin Tambria, the actor, and Maria Erich, also both in Kudam, to read because I was so excited. I was really afraid because I thought I'm afraid that I start crying and cannot stop. No, and it was okay, nice reading. And then I came home to my apartment. I came in and I was crying so hard. And I said, all the time, like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I couldn't stop it. It was really, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. This deep feeling of I have to do something is gone. I'm still, of course, we are in the post-production of Kudam 77. And of course, it's a Jewish story, background story of the dancing school is a big part in this, of course.
Talking about the writing process and then the shooting and the post-production, it's a lot of time that goes into the making of a series and a film. How hard is it for you to say goodbye to your characters and the story when you've spent so much time with them?
It's sometimes hard with the characters. As a writer, I'm free to go back to them. That's so wonderful. And I can do it with no, there's only a laptop and me in my mind.
Yeah.
And a cup of tea. And they are back.
Yeah.
And they are knocking at my door and, hey, have you forgotten me or what's wrong?
Talking about writing, we still have a few rapid fire questions for you for the end. Is there a particular story that you would still like to tackle?
I'm all day long thinking of, of stories. And when I do my daily walk, I walk through the woods. It's very important. The first hour, I'm always yelling and all this shit. I'm so angry going uphill. I'm always angry. And there's a special point on this walk after 1 hour where nearly every day I have the idea of for some series.
Wow.
And it's like, oh, I could tell that. And then I'm going down also an hour. And most of the walks, it's like when I'm at home again, it's like, no, it's not such a good idea. Yet just now as we are filming or post-producing this Kudam 77, I'm really sitting in front of this scenes, or tomorrow we are watching the first two episodes together with producer and so. And now I just talked the whole morning with them to make some changes. And I'm really sitting in front of it and I do not know how I could write that. I do not understand it.
Okay.
Because I really like it. Okay, it took a long time, this book, also 2 years, or not all 2 years writing, but thinking, changing, starting again, saying no to the ZDF, no idea. I'm still afraid that this is the last time I'm really capable to write some good story. The only thing what helps is to write, of course. But it's not easy to start writing because there's this fear of the right page. Yeah. and it doesn't go away.
Mm. What would you say is the biggest misconception about the work of a writer?
There are so different opinions about writers. Yeah, I think what I'm experiencing all the time, that people come to me like, oh, you have to tell my family story. I also get these many letters.
Yeah.
And of course, every family story is very interesting. I love to hear stories. I'm all on YouTube. I'm always looking for people or sightseeing people telling about the World War II or so. I love it. But that's not, if I write it down, that's not a story.
Yeah.
So a story has to have much, much more, a vision, some relevance. And that's what I'm also telling the ZDF, for example. If they say, oh, yes, now we can do Kudamm 80, Kudamm 83, Kudamm 0.
Yeah.
So, and I'm always saying, no, okay, we can do that. But it's so hard to find a relevant story or something that counts and to tell it. That's difficult.
Yeah, you have usually a special connection to the stories you tell, so that has to happen.
And that's difficult to explain to people.
Yeah.
But I really have to feel some connection, and I really get very also from production companies. Of course, can't you tell the story of, I don't know, of Tesla or whatever. And I'm like, no.
Hard pass. Thank you. Staying with the work of writing, has it changed for you over the years? That can be an external change or the way that you yourself approach the way you write?
No.
Fair enough.
it's really, that's what I said. It's really sad that it's still this fear, and it's not vanishing, not getting better. Of course, it's like a roller coaster of emotions. Okay, I'm talented, or no, I'm absolutely not. That's shit.
Yeah.
And, of course, but what really changed is that I'm, and I don't know, it was when it started, I think 5 or 7 years ago, I feel safe in this existential way that I can go to some company.
Yeah,
that's my idea, and that in the end there will be a series or a movie.
And that you can be involved as well, as much as you want to.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's, of course, it's also a very important point.
And finally, can you share which project might be next? I mean, you already mentioned that you're currently in the post-production for Kudamm for the 4th series, but is there anything that you're sort of maybe thinking about, or is it too early to tell?
I have a few in my pipeline, and it's something I try to not to spoil.
We're happy with whatever you can tell us.
A story about a settle in a train. A historical train, because I'm fascinated of trains.
Yeah.
There's a sleeping wagon and restaurant, and so it's a kind of escapistic, like Murder on the Orient Express, but not a crime series. And now I'm researching about it, and just now I'm thinking about the personnel of the series, the family, this working place, drama family, and it's a lot of fun, because I think now, just now I found them, people and the characters, and that's a very big milestone to have the characters, the names. That's the most important thing. If I have the name, then I have the character. Because often I like, his name is Jürgen, no Richard, no Robert. I'm changing all the time while writing, and I know then I do not have the character really in my hands. But when I know, no, he's a Martin, then I know. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
You're welcome, Christina. Thank you.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.